And knowing that that was not a permissible reason to do it, he concocted a false reason, that is that the Department of Justice needed this information to enforce the Voting Rights Act. The notion that this Justice Department is interested in enforcing the Voting Rights Act is a joke to begin with. But secondly, the Justice Department has never sought this information to enforce the Voting Rights Act under any administration. But he finally prevailed upon Jeff Sessions, personal call to Jeff Sessions, to get the DOJ to write a letter in which they appeared to be asking for what Wilbur Ross, in fact, initiated. And then he concocted a record that sought to conceal that. And so yesterday, a federal judge here in New York issued a 277-page opinion after a three-week trial, finding a veritable cornucopia of legal violations by Wilbur Ross and the Commerce Department in seeking to conceal the real reason why they're trying to distort the census.
And clearly this will go to the Supreme Court, the Kavanaugh Supreme Court. How do you think they will rule?
Well, I think, you know, you've got a very extensive set of factual findings by this district court, 277 pages. He's the one who heard the testimony. That makes it much more difficult for the court to overturn it. But also, at the end of the day, this is about democracy. Democracy turns on knowing who lives where so that we know who should be representing them. And so I think every member of the court ought to be interested in an accurate census.
Well, I want to thank David Cole of the ACLU and Kristen Clark of Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland, Oregon Old Time Music Gathering from January 16th through the 20th at various locations around Portland. The Portland, Oregon Old Time Music Gathering aims to celebrate and enrich the community of traditional old time Appalachian style string band musicians. There will be jam sessions, a Cajun honky-tonk night, concerts, dances, workshops, and performances. Again, that's the Portland, Oregon Old Time Music Gathering from January 16th through the 20th at various locations around Portland. Location and age restrictions vary. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the Rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 5:03, and up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Joanne Hardesty calls out hecklers, Nancy Pelosi disinvites Trump, and in international news, a suicide bombing in Syria. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard. Today at the Multnomah County Courthouse, Citizens held a protest in the fight to demand justice for the late Patrick Kimmons, who was murdered by Portland police. Here is a statement made by Letha Winston, who is the mother of Patrick Kimmons. Hello, everyone. It's time we come once again to take a stand and demand justice. Justice meaning for police to be held accountable for killing our kids and my son. My son Patrick Kimmons was murdered in cold blood on 3rd and Harvey in downtown Portland by Jeffrey Livingston and Sergeant Britt of the Portland Police. It's time we come together as one like Martin Luther King did and fight for our right and take a stand. It's time that the Portland Police be held accountable for killing our kids. It's time we demand that the police wear full-body cameras. I have a dream just like Martin Luther King, and because of that dream, I must be heard. I will not stop fighting for justice until God is ready for me to go. I demand justice. Last Sunday, Andre Gladden Sr., a 36-year-old black man with schizophrenia, was murdered by a Portland police officer. His 21-year-old son, Andre Gladden Jr. of Sacramento, California, is in the process of suing the Portland Police Bureau over his father's death. The family of Gladden Sr. have organized an online fundraiser to help with funeral costs. KBOO believes in justice for those hunted by the police. Please stay tuned daily for our newscast as we follow this story. Portland Police Bureau Chief Danielle Outlaw will speak on the theme of Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, at Albina Ministerial Alliance's citywide Martin Luther King Jr. service. The service will take place at 4 p.m. on Sunday, January 20th at Maranatha Church at 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. On January 20th at Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church at 3138 North Vancouver Avenue in Portland from 2 to 4 p.m., Vancouver Avenue is one of Portland's historic venues and the only church in Oregon where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. addressed the beloved community in November 1961 as part of his trip to the Pacific Northwest during the Civil Rights Movement. The public is encouraged to attend both programs, and donations of $25 per event are encouraged, or $45 for both. Ambassador Atala Shabazz, eldest daughter of the late Malcolm X, and Dr. Betty Shabazz, at-large lifetime ambassador for peace, appointed by the Prime Minister of Belize, will be making her first Portland appearance as the keynote speaker. The theme is, Now is the Time. Many Portland City Commissioner meetings are interrupted by a handful of men complaining about the police, corruption, and other issues. While the commissioners have done their best to ignore the interruptions and continue with business, newly elected Commissioner Joanne Hardesty is taking a different approach, calling them out. Hardesty said, quote, I find it chilling and disrespectful that there are a few white men who think that everything this council does is about them. It isn't, end quote. Two of the men have shown up at the homes of Mayor Ted Wheeler, Police Chief Danielle Outlaw, and District Attorney Rod Underhill to videotape them. One was jailed and accused of violating a stalking order to stay away from Chief Outlaw. Hardesty said she is eager to hear any police proposals any policy proposals the men have, but that they need to stop drowning out the voices of others. Clark College will honor the teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Wednesday, January 16th, with two events, a traveling museum exhibit and a keynote speaker focused on the African American experience. Both events are free and open to the public. Additionally, there will be a keynote speech delivered by hip-hop pioneer MC Sha-Rock, the first female rap artist to record on a label and the first to appear on national television. Sha-Rock will speak on the history and impact of hip-hop culture from a pioneer's perspective from 12 to 1 p.m., also in Geyser Student Center. In honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy of service to others, Clark College encourages your donations of hair and skincare products for African-American families served by YWCA Clark County. According to Portland's The Scanner, Vanita Gupta, president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, issued the following statement on the passage of House Resolution 41, a resolution rejecting white nationalism and white supremacy. White nationalism and white supremacy are antithetical to what makes this country great and have no place in our public discourse. These hateful ideologies are the motivation behind too many hate incidents that terrorize whole communities. We applaud the near-unanimous House of Representatives for passing this long-overdue resolution. However, it is not enough. We have an administration that continues to push an agenda that promotes white nationalism and discrimination. Every single member who voted for this resolution should stand against those efforts that seek to promote hatred and bigotry in whatever form it may take. The U.S. refrigerant industry is in favor of a treaty to reduce emissions, as are Republicans, but the U.S. would not sign. Carbon dioxide releases in the U.S. rose in 2018 by almost 3.5%. This is your week in water.
Global treaty to reduce greenhouse gases goes into effect without the U.S. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A treaty went into effect at the beginning of this year in which 65 countries agreed to limit hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, used in air conditioners and refrigerators. HFCs are potent, nearly 12,000 times more so than carbon dioxide.
While the treaty, called the Kigali Amendment, is a positive step, the two largest countries manufacturing and using HFCs, the U.S. and China, they didn't sign it.
But Earther reports that China might eventually agree, and the U.S. refrigerant industry is in favor of the treaty, which is also supported by 13 Republicans. The industry is worried about China getting a leg up on making HFC free.
Down so far is the fear and uncertainty that our tribal members and the others who rely on it for food.
A new global treaty to reduce greenhouse gases goes into effect without the U.S. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A treaty went into effect at the beginning of this year in which 65 countries agreed to limit hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, used in air conditioners and refrigerators. HFCs are potent, nearly 12,000 times more so than carbon dioxide.
While the treaty, called the Kigali Amendment, is a positive step, the two largest countries manufacturing and using HFCs, the U.S. and China, they didn't sign it.
But Earther reports that China might eventually agree, and the U.S. refrigerant industry is in favor of the treaty, which is also supported by 13 Republicans. The industry is worried about China getting a leg up on making HFC-free air conditioners and refrigerators.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is not on target to meet emission goals, according to a report from the Rhodium Group, an independent research firm. Carbon dioxide releases during 2018 rose by almost 3.5%.
The news comes as a record number of coal plants were retired last year, and there was a growth in demand for electricity, but natural gas was the main fuel used to meet that increased need.
The transportation sector is still the largest source of U.S. emissions for the third year in a row. Demand for gasoline fell, but the use of jet and diesel fuel grew.
If there's a silver lining from this report, it's that carbon emissions are still down more than 10% since 2005.
The Trump administration is meeting significant opposition, some of it bipartisan, to its plans to open nearly all offshore areas to oil and gas drilling. Last week, Democrats in the House introduced 8 bills that combined would protect every inch of coast, including the Arctic.
The nonprofit news source Coastal Review reports that on the same day, lawmakers from 9 states filed bills in their legislatures blocking or limiting new offshore drilling.
Legislators are worried not only about oil spills and their effects on coastal economies that rely on tourism and recreation, but also said that offshore drilling would lead to more greenhouse gas emissions.
In South Carolina, the Republican governor and attorney general have now joined a lawsuit launched by environmental groups and 9 other attorneys general to halt seismic testing for oil and gas off the Atlantic coast.
While state legislators can only pass laws within a 3-mile limit from the shore, they hope their efforts will show resistance to the pro-drilling agenda.
The bills introduced in the House may not make it through the Republican-controlled Senate, but for now, release of a final federal drilling plan has been delayed due to the government shutdown.
As the Earth warms, most of the excess heat is stored in the oceans, and a new report published in the journal Science finds that seas are heating up 40% faster than what was estimated 5 years ago.
One of the authors of the study, Zeke Haasfather, told the New York Times that 2018 will be the warmest year on record for Earth's oceans, which he called the best thermometer we have for changes in the planet.
Ocean temperatures have broken records for several years and have already devastated coral reefs, raised sea levels, and produced more destructive hurricanes.
When waters heat up, they take up more space, leading to sea level rise affecting coastal areas. CNN reports that fish species respond to warmer oceans by migrating to cooler areas, and some places are too warm for any fish, which can lead to food shortages and insecurity.
In the future, reservoirs could be doing more than storing water. They could be producing energy. According to a new report by the National Renewable Energy Lab, placing floating solar panels on existing reservoirs could generate 10% of the nation's electricity needs.
Energize Weekly reports that one of the challenges of large-scale wind and solar generation is the space it takes, but the study shows that placing panels on reservoirs could save more than 8,000 square miles of land.
Researchers identified 24,000 reservoirs suitable for photovoltaics. In addition to generating power, the study says the floating panels could reduce water evaporation and algae growth. Placing them near hydroelectric facilities could increase energy yields by using existing transmission infrastructure.
Currently, Japan has the greatest number of floating solar arrays, and there are about 70 worldwide.
And finally, 2018 was the most destructive wildfire season on record in California, according to the state's Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Climate change is undoubtedly making the situation worse as the region dries, and because wildfires spew tons of carbon into the atmosphere, it's becoming a vicious cycle.
One method to reduce the potential for destructive fires is to give them less fuel to get going. That means clearing flammable brush and grasses, tinder that could make a spark quickly turn into an inferno.
Prescribed burns can help, but they're expensive, and funds are already being spent to battle blazes. But there's a less expensive method gaining traction.
Yep, using goats. Prescribed grazing, as it's called, to clear land is not new, but it's definitely catching on, especially in places like Nevada City, which is about 80 miles from Paradise, California, the site of last year's deadly campfire.
Vice Mayor Renette Senham thinks goats can help the small town clear out-of-control blackberry bushes and other brush on its public lands. The plan is to put goats in pens with solar-powered electric fences and allow them to munch away.
According to Wired magazine, the animals are highly efficient and very nimble at eating around thorns. After they've moved on, humans can come in and clear out big limbs and other forest debris.
But booking a herd costs between $500 and $1,500 an acre. While the city is looking into getting grants, that process can take many months, and time is of the essence. So the city set up a GoFundMe page, or rather a GoatFundMe page, to raise the $30,000 they need.
And Senham is hopeful that they meet their goal, telling locals that as a bonus, goats will happily eat poison oak. And who couldn't love that?
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works.
Citing security issues due to the government shutdown, Secret Service agents are among those working without pay. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has asked President Trump to delay his State of the Union address, scheduled for January 29th. Pelosi suggested that Trump either reschedule his speech for when the government has reopened or to make his address in writing. Despite proposals for restarting the government from Republicans as well as Democrats, Trump refuses to budge on his demand of $5.3 billion for his border wall. Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, said they feared that once the government was reopened, the White House would lose control of the process of shaping a border security compromise. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 5:30, it's News from the Boo with Mike Crenshaw and a short segment of Between the Lines Radio, where we will discuss news for all regions. At 6, it's Say It Out Loud. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be breezy with a 100% chance of rain and a low of 40. Tomorrow, we'll see decreasing winds, a high of 48, and an 80% chance of rain. Today in history, 100 years ago, Congress ratified the 18th Amendment prohibiting the, quote, manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors. The law took effect nationally on January 17, 1920, and was repealed in 1933 with the passage of the 21st Amendment. The quote of the day is from writer Dorothy Parker. I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. More than half of the Michigan bumblebee species has dropped down by 50%. According to NPR, bees in Michigan are disappearing rapidly. There is a class of pesticides introduced about 25 years ago called neonicotinoids that has been linked to declining bee populations. This, though, is only one factor in the disappearance of the Michigan bees. And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American issues, news, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. House Democrats held a hearing Tuesday on the partial government shutdown's impact on Indian country. Witnesses discussed how the shutdown, now in week four, is hurting daily tribal operations, health care, and food services. Mary Green Trottier is president of the National Association of Food Distribution Programs on Indian Reservations. She says each month the program serves nearly 100,000 people from more than 250 tribes in rural areas by providing them with food packages. The program helps those with limited access to fresh, affordable foods, including a number of elders.
The most widespread impact of the shutdown so far is the fear and uncertainty that our tribal members and the others who rely on it for food assistance are feeling. Since the shutdown began, our ITOs all over the country have been receiving calls from concerned tribal leaders, program participants, federal employees who are furloughed, and our own ITO staff. All of them are worried that our program is not in operation at all.
Trottier says many programs have administrative funds through January to operate and are already struggling to stay open. She adds that food deliveries have been stalled, some programs are running out of certain products, and if best of used by expiration dates do not meet requirements, those foods cannot be delivered to tribes. And she says that many programs have already been making do with very little for a long time. Lawmakers at the hearing included Native American representatives Deb Holland and Sharice Davids. Democrats are calling on the president to end the shutdown. House state lawmakers in South Dakota voted against forming a select committee to investigate the residency of a Native American Democrat. The House voted 62-5 against a call for a committee. Lee Strubinger reports.
The call for a select committee to inquire about Representative Puri Poirier's residency was brought by Representatives Steve Livermont and Sam Marty. Of the four-way race for two seats in District 27, Poirier came in with the most votes and Livermont in second. That edged out incumbent Elizabeth May, who is Representative Marty's sister. At play is the state's loose definition of residency. Election law states that a candidate must reside in their district for 2 years preceding an election. Livermont, a Republican district mate with Poirier, says constituents have tried to bring up the issue for 8 months.
Only to see no results. We are left here as there's still doubt in many people's minds. The definitions of residency is not what a common man would think it is. I'm afraid that the attempt to define residency to protect trust laws may be jeopardizing our election laws.
Two West River Republicans publicly challenged Poirier's and State Senator Red Don Foster's residency, both Oglala Lakota Democrats, moments before they were sworn into office. Republican leadership in both chambers say there's plenty of evidence that the two lawmakers should remain seated. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
This week, Deborah Lekanoff took office, becoming the first Native American woman to hold a seat in the Washington State House of Representatives. The Democrat was appointed vice chair of the Environmental and Energy Committee. Climate change, ecosystems, and marine life are areas she'd like to address. She's also an advocate for education. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
January 21st, the Portland Playhouse will honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The celebration will begin at 4 p.m. with a free performance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Civil Rights Leader. This will be a one-man interactive show featuring Charles Grant as Dr. King. Playful, poignant, and powerful, this production chronicles the civil rights leader from his childhood to his adulthood, marking influencing moments along the way. All ages are welcome. Runtime is 45 minutes. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wishes the news was more nourishing.
Our government shut down. Day 26. All the gridlocked media can say is there's nothing to say. No one's doing anything. And here's another person who's going to run for president. What about now? Who in government wants to do something new, and why won't others in government let them? In England, Parliament just said no to Brexit, so more gridlock. I wish the U.S., like England, could call a no-confidence vote. Clean house, the White House, the Senate. What if you could only clean your house every 2, 4, or 6 years? There's dozens of interesting actions going on around the world that Google, Facebook, etc. don't want us to know about. Needed solutions that aren't corporate enough, profitable enough for media to talk or even think about. Some information is useful. Most mass media is junk news, empty calories, information, constipation that just makes you hungrier. The most nourishing information comes fresh and unprocessed from another person. Attention is like sunshine. We can all be sources. Face to face, gridlock clouds can vanish like that. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
To honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his legacy, United Way of the Columbia Willamette and partners will be mobilizing nearly 2,000 volunteer opportunities across 73 community projects as part of the 12th annual MLK Weekend of Service. The event runs from Friday, January 18 through Monday, January 21st, with volunteer projects each day. Each volunteer project will have a United Way staff member or volunteer leader available on site to answer questions. Canada Revenue Agency is investigating the Jewish National Fund of Canada over use of charitable donations for Israeli military and building illegal settlements, as the Israeli minister calls for annexation of occupied Palestinian territories. This is the Middle East Minute Plus.
I'm Esti Chandler for the Middle East Minute Plus. Pressured by human rights activists and a Palestinian refugee, the Canada Revenue Agency has begun an investigation into the Jewish National Fund of Canada over its use of charitable donations to build projects for the Israeli military in illegal settlements in contravention of Canadian law. JNF Canada's parent organization, the Jewish National Fund, predates the establishment of Israel and uses tree planting as a cover to ethnically cleanse Palestinians from their land. In 1948, the JNF took control of most of the land which had been confiscated from Palestinian refugees, later becoming a quasi-state organization with a policy to lease land only to Jews on an openly discriminatory basis. Documents show that the JNF has repeatedly used JNF Canada as a conduit to collect funds for illegal projects, and funds continue to flow into projects connected to the Israeli military. On Sunday, newly appointed Israeli Immigration and Absorption Minister Yoav Gallant dismissed the possibility of establishing a Palestinian state in the West Bank and called for the occupied territory to be annexed by Israel, saying, quote, "Settlements are the new Zionism of the 21st century. I am clearly saying no to a Palestinian state. It is not possible to have more than one state west of the Jordan River," end quote. He vowed to work to apply Israeli sovereignty to all of historic Palestine and to strengthen the settlements. Israel captured the West Bank along with East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip in 1967 and has militarily occupied it ever since. In contravention of international law, Israel is estimated to have settled 600,000 to 700,000 Israelis onto occupied Palestinian land. Israel's nation-state law that passed last year states that building and strengthening the settlements is a national interest. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint project of KPFK and
While British Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit plan was crushed in Parliament yesterday with a 2-1 vote against it, she did squeak past a no-confidence vote today, 306 to 325. This does nothing to clarify how Brexit, approved by 52% in a referendum last year, will go forward, and shows even more clearly how fractious the British government currently is. Over 100 Parliament members opposed to Brexit voted to keep May in charge for now. There is growing expectation that the Prime Minister will ask the European Union for an extension of the March 29th deadline for Britain to formalize what its future economic relations with Europe will be. An ISIS suicide bombing in northern Syria today killed 15 people, including at least one American soldier. The bombing happened near the Turkish border in the city of Manbij at a restaurant frequented by U.S. troops on patrol. Trump ally Senator Lindsey Graham suggested the president's announced withdrawal of troops in Syria encourages Islamic State fighters to make attacks like the one today. U.S. forces maintain a number of bases near Manbij and patrol the area frequently. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. Here are the main points again. Joanne Hardesty called out hecklers. Nancy Pelosi disinvites Trump. And in international news, a suicide bombing in Syria. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Jacob Soderberg. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is also Rachel Hartley. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is additionally Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomena.